If he says he wants to meet me, and well, I haven't got the right clothes.
What's been done to her? A face? What's the matter with a face?
The victim is missing a number of lower internal organs. What with this and the blood draining, it looks more likely that your killer has surgical experience.
It was called the Black Dahlia case. She was murdered in Los Angeles in 1947. Her killer was never found.
Roses are red, violets are blue. Who cut Louise Pennell's mouth in two? How the hell did they get hold of that information?
Richard Reynolds, nice to meet you.
Dick. Kelly Riley, Kieran Hines. The corpse of a woman with black hair lies head to one side. Her mutilated mouth transforms back to normal and she stirs into life. Her image disappears, replaced by a blonde woman on a seafront. Above suspicion, the Red Dahlia. Sean Dingwall, Celine Jones, Michelle Holmes, Amanda Lawrence, at the police station.
Is this footage from the nightclub? Anything useful?
Not as yet. We've checked the exterior, we're now onto the interior.
Well, I forgot. The landlady gave me a description of a ring worn by the man that Louise was seeing. It was a carnelian stone worn on his little finger.
Well, we keep that to ourselves. If we release it, he just takes it off. That's her there, isn't it?
Louise sits at the bar and looks around. Executive producers Linda LaPlante, Liz Thorburn.
Yeah, she's looking for someone.
DC Anna Travis is watching the screen.
Hello, Jim Thorburn.
Sharon says that the man that Louise was seeing, he didn't like her to dress tarty.
She saw him dress a bit tart there.
Yeah, well, that's just it. Sharon reckons that maybe she was trying to piss him off.
Maybe it worked.
Joan hangs up.
Just had it confirmed that there were two calls to the mobile from the advert, but...
What?
They're still tracing the two callers.
Terrific.
For us.
Sir, this came in. It's for you.
Barbara hands Langton a large brown envelope.
Gloves.
Ahead of you.
Sharon, this is DC Travis. Can you call me, please? I'd like to talk to you. Thank you.
Anna turns back to the screen.
Wait, look. That's her again.
Hold it there, Mike.
Lewis pauses the tape. Langton opens the envelope wearing latex gloves and removes a message composed of letters cut up from a newspaper.
LP deserved to die. Another victim will pay the same price.
The LA Examiner received an almost identical letter. Sir, I'm worried about Sharon. I'm calling her, but she's not calling me back.
9-2, Gov. It's a journalist.
Get it over to the lab, Mike. Not that we'll get any prints or DNA from it.
Langton.
Barbara, can you keep trying Sharon for me, please?
Yeah,
thanks.
This is a murder inquiry, Mr. Reynolds, not some reality TV show. You agreed on a press embargo. You break it, I'll have you arrested.
Travis, with me. Your boyfriend's taking delivery of the victim's handbag.
And before you say it, I know it's just like the Black Dahlia case. We'll let you know, Mr. Reynolds.
No way. I'm keeping my end of the bargain. It was sent to me. It's my property.
Just trying to keep you from making an arse of yourself. Wait here, Travis.
Anna hangs back with Richard Reynolds in a corridor at the morgue.
Pleasant sod, isn't he?
He's under a lot of pressure.
Anna sits down on a two-seater bench in the corridor. Richard stands.
You okay? Seem a bit distant.
Working.
You free for dinner this week?
I don't know. I'll have to check my schedule. I could be working late.
Richard sits down next to Anna.
Well... You call me.
Anna looks at Richard, who avoids eye contact.
I could cook us dinner one night, maybe.
Langton approaches with a woman.
You know, DC Travis, this is the journalist Richard Reynolds, Commander Jane Lee.
Hi. We're not finished by any means, but you can come and see what we've got for you.
I don't have long. I'm due to give a lecture.
She ignores Richard's outstretched hand. He follows the others into a forensics lab.
Here we have the contents of the handbag. Powder compact. Two lipsticks, a small mirror, a used tissue with lipstick marks, and a green leather address book.
I'd say that everything here has been very carefully chosen by your suspect. If there was anything here of use to the investigation, you would have discarded it.
I agree.
May I?
She puts on latex gloves and inspects the handbag.
Well, this is good quality, but it's old. Perhaps something bought in a charity shop.
Excuse me.
Shh. Sorry, go on.
There's a residue of powder. Smells of old-fashioned perfume. Chipre?
Yes. My grandmother used to wear it. It's no longer in production. The lipsticks?
Well, this red colour's a bit unusual for a young girl, and again, old-fashioned. Vintage.
Her flatmate said that she was going for a look that
the
was quite...
The pink lipstick has been worn down, but as you can see, the head of it has been scraped. And lastly, we have the brown paper wrapping.
The envelope is behind glass.
There's a smudged finger mark across one stamp.
That could be mine.
Anna and Langton turn to look at Richard.
Right, well, we need to get your prints taken right away. Excuse me. Could you take him for an elimination set? Travis.
This way.
Stay here.
Richard is escorted out by a lab technician. Outside, in the corridor.
I've been studying the original case history of the Elizabeth Short murder.
Anyone want a coffee?
No, thank you. Obviously, you've been doing the same, comparing the notes and threads of that case alongside your so-called Red Dahlia, but if someone's making a sickening mirror of the Los Angeles case, then we should take seriously the threat to kill again. There was another victim after Elizabeth Short. Her name was Jean Axford French. Can we walk to my car, please?
Commander Lee, aggravated by the noise Anna made hitting the vending machine, leaves with Langton. Anna grabs a coffee and follows them outside.
He used the victim's own lipstick to write obscenities on her naked body. 4 weeks after the Elizabeth Short murder, and the killer was never caught.
We've all read the book, Jane. We've not exactly got the T-shirt, but we're fully aware of the case history.
Nevertheless, James, I have concerns. You've got a very dangerous killer on the loose, and don't think those letters are just a ploy to get into the press.
I have taken every contact seriously so far.
What I am trying to make clear to you is that right now you have a killer at large goading you. You, personally. Someone who knew Louise must hold a clue.
I'll keep that in mind.
You do that.
Thanks for coming, Jane.
To Anna.
Get in the car.
Commander Lee drives off. Anna, who's leaning against Langton's car, gets in the driver's side. Richard comes outside but is left behind. In the car...
And you know that Pratt from tech support added into the mix? After intensive inspection of the anonymous letters and judging by the different sizes of the lettering, apparently it's possible that the suspect could be a musician. Concert pianist.
The handbag, it came from the grandmother. It was one of the items the housekeeper listed.
The mother held it near safe.
Yeah, I tried. Did she do a profile course?
Langton lights a cigarette. At the police station, Langton walks briskly down a corridor, with Anna close behind.
I left messages for Sharon Bilkin, but she hasn't got back to me.
Yeah, then go and see her. What?
We've traced another girl who answered the advert. Elisa Halstead lives in Hampstead.
What? Forget it, Travis. Get over to Hampstead. Paul, you go check on Sharon Bilkin. If this bastard is going by the book, we could get another victim.
But we're in the Black Dahlia case. It was a month after Elizabeth Short's murder.
But the killer is in the 1940s Los Angeles, Paul. He's very much alive here in London. Get over there.
Baroli and Anna exchange looks. Baroli grabs his jacket and leaves. He arrives outside a Victorian conversion building and rings the doorbell. He stands back, looks up at one of the flats, and jots something down on a notepad. He rings the bell again. He drops a note through the letterbox and leaves. Anna strolls up to an antique shop and goes inside. Lisa, a young woman with light brown hair in ringlets, sits at a desk at the back of the shop.
He recognised me from my photo.
He introduced himself?
Yes. Mr. Edwards. He asked whether I was Lisa Halstead. I said I was. And we went and sat down. Didn't even offer me a drink. And I showed him my CV.
Go on.
Well, he asked whether I had a passport. And where I lived, and how soon I'd be available to begin. The thing was that Mummy had just booked a skiing holiday, so I said I couldn't for a couple of weeks. I mean, I only started here last Monday. And it was odd. From being very nice, he sort of... Well, he just got up and said he was meeting other girls and that he'd be in touch.
Well, did you see any of the other girls?
The only other girl I saw was... You see, there are two entrances. And when I left, I went out the back. It's near Oxford Street. And there was another girl. In fact, she spoke to me. She was looking for a bar and said she was meeting someone. And I said if she went up the escalator, there were two cocktail bars, and in the main one, she... Oh, she could have been meeting him, couldn't she?
Or did she say anything else?
Something about coming in the wrong entrance? I remember she was very shy, nervous.
Could this be the girl?
A picture of dark-haired Louise.
No. No, she wasn't dark-haired. It was sort of blondish.
She hands the picture back to Anna.
Oh, another thing I remember. She really smelt of mothballs.
At the morgue.
The labia majora are intact, but within the vagina we found a large piece of skin, which was from her upper torso. Some of the right breast has been cut away, and the nipple forced into her anal passage, which is dilated with multiple abrasions.
This must never be released.
Not only did we find fecal matter in her stomach, it had been introduced into her mouth. She ingested it before death.
Guffey.
Lewis signals to Langton that Anna looks upset.
Let's take you out. Come on.
Her body was scrubbed clean and the internal organs are bleach damaged.
In the corridor, Anna sits on the bench with her head bowed. Langton pours her a cup of water from the cooler.
Here you go.
She takes the plastic cup.
I'm fine. It's okay, I just felt like I knew her.
You didn't know her.
Anna takes a sip of water and rests the cup beside her on the bench. She doesn't look up at Langton.
I think you should go home.
She pinches the bridge of her nose.
You have a handkerchief, your nose is running.
Sorry.
He holds out a handkerchief. She pauses, then takes it, glancing up at him briefly, then blows her nose. She wipes away a tear, then offers the hanky back.
Sorry.
Keep it. Get off home when you feel like. Sorry.
Langton puts his hand on her shoulder sympathetically and walks away. Anna bows her head, pressing her fingers against her teary eyes. Back in the morgue, Veronica is talking to Lewis when Langton comes back in.
I would say she was subject to a vicious sexual attack. Both her rectum and vagina are covered in cuts and abrasions.
I think we've heard enough, Veronica. Mike.
Yeah.
Thanks, Veronica.
Okay.
Lewis and Langton go. In the corridor...
We gotta keep a lid on this.
You know, if someone's shielding the killer, this might just...
Between us and him.
Let me find him, and we will find him. I thought I told you to go home.
The body of a white female has been discovered, dumped in a field off the A4. Body's covered in a red coat.
Langton, Lewis, Baroli and Anna walk on grass towards a forensics team who are investigating the crime scene in blue overalls, with uniformed officers standing nearby. They stop at a woman's corpse, the torso covered in a red coat. Langton nods, and a forensics officer removes the coat. Written in red on the woman's naked torso are the words, "Fuck you."
I'm having my nails done this morning.
A young woman holds up her unmanicured hand. Now the dead woman's hand, with newly manicured nails. Anna looks shocked.
It's Sharon Bilkin.
She only had a couple of hundred in her bank account.
Yeah, I did try and contact her, you know. I'm going to bring this answer phone in.
In Sharon Bilkin's flat, Langton drops a cutlery drawer. Anna's nerves are in shreds.
Anna, you tried to call her. Baroli tried, so don't get consumed by guilt. If there's anyone who should feel shit over this, it's me, not you.
In the incident room, Joan's on the phone.
Well, then you're in the wrong department. You're in the wrong department.
Barbara's at a computer. She looks weary. Anna comes over.
Sharon's answer machine, will you check the messages? There'll be a few on there from me.
I will do, but I'm working my way through the address book. Not had a night off, neither has Joan. Both of us are pinned to the computer screens. God, I can't think straight. She's got a migraine.
I went to Sharon Bilkins, but there was no answer. Maybe I should have gone back.
Wouldn't have done any good. She's been dead at least 24 hours. Post-mortem report. Just like the second victim in the Black Dahlia case. The mutilation was not as horrific, but nevertheless, Sharon had been tortured and suffered significant pain before she died.
Anna studies the photographs of the victims on the investigation board. There is a photo of Sharon Bilkin smiling. Below is a photo taken at the crime scene of her dead body under the red coat. Langton stands beside Anna.
Similar, but it's not the same. For a start, Sharon didn't have her mouth slit.
They both stare at the board.
She knew something. She knew him.
The city girl was holding out on you. Something that made him deviate from his copycat routine. If you can work that out, I might need a sewer.
Lewis gets up wearily from his desk and pats Baroli's shoulder on his way over to Langton. Baroli is deep in thought.
Right, we've tracked down Lewis's previous employer, hotel in Paddington, the Pembroke.
Lewis gives Langton a look.
What?
Everybody's been working around the clock on this. Any chance of getting the weekend off?
Langton glances around.
Okay, split it.
Lewis nods. Behind the blind in his office, Langton stands deep in thought. At her desk, Anna makes a phone call.
Hi, it's Anna. Are you still fancy dinner tonight? Is Bagwell okay? I'll see you at 8. I look forward to it.
Anna sees Langton watching her. He closes the blind. At the bar in the Pembroke Hotel,
it was a cash deal, basically. We have a lot of salesmen. We're near the station. It's very convenient.
Was she on the game?
What she did in her own time is up to her.
Let's cut all the bollocks. Attractive 24-year-old working for cash in hand, washing dishes.
No. She was skinny, bitter nails, greasy hair, always in need of a bath. The right minger. That's why we got rid of her. She had this attitude like she was going to be somebody. None of the men here would screw her.
Show her room to me.
Langton swigs his drink and follows the bald manager upstairs into Louise's room. A maid polishes the stair rail.
When was the last time you saw Louise?
She was supposed to work, but she took off for the day. I told her about coming and going as she pleased. She had to go and see her grandmother. She came back very late.
I'm sorry, I'll go and get ready now.
Sorry?
Just get off me!
I'm going to throw you out because I've got a hotel full of clients and you owe me!
Here, look, take this, you can have it, Silver!
A candlestick.
Don't punch me around! I don't care! I'm going to get a job with a dentist!
If you're going to need one! She left without getting paid. Could you give her this if you see her? Tell her no hard feelings.
She's dead.
The hotel manager lowers the money he's holding as Langton leaves. At home, Anna lights a candle and lifts a glass of wine. She glances over at a clock on the wall. It's 9 o'clock. She sips the wine. She puts the glass down and rushes to the front door.
I got here as soon as I could.
Well, I'll serve up straight away.
Great, I'm starving.
Richard's carrying a bunch of flowers and a bottle of wine.
The pasta's probably a bit overcooked.
Do you want me to open this?
There's one open on the table already.
In Langton's office.
Maybe I can be of some assistance. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll send you some of Miss Pennell's personal things she had with her when she, shall we say, disappeared.
Is it me you're trying to screw, you bastard?
Langton takes a swig of whiskey.
See how far you can get with them. Now I have to say goodbye. You may be trying to trace.
Shall I open the bottle I brought? It's a slightly better vintage than this one.
At Anna's dinner table.
I've been reading about the Black Dahlia again. I keep going back to it. It's sickening to think that some maniac is trying to emulate a murder that happened in 1947. Why? Draining a body of blood before slicing her in two. They reckon he killed another couple of women. You're taking that as a possible copycat thing, the letter sent to me, the package sent to me.
Anna gets up from the table and takes the wine bottle and her glass with her.
You think he's going to kill again?
She sits on a sofa nearby and pours herself another glass of wine. Richard leaves the table and sits down beside her.
Do you get to sleep okay?
Depends. Sometimes it's images, though, they creep into your head and they stay.
You know the image I can't get rid of? The look in her eyes. I never knew dead eyes held an expression. I thought you just blanked out after their heart stopped. But there's so much pain in her eyes. Did Louise's eyes have the same expression?
Richard shrugs. Anna looks at him intently and nods sadly.
Yeah.
She sits back on the sofa, wine glass in hand.
Why would one human being inflict so much agony on another? What makes them that way?
Madness.
Richard lowers his eyes, then moves closer to Anna.
Do you have a lot of friends?
She shakes her head.
No. Work colleagues, mostly.
What about parents?
They're both dead. Why are you asking me all these questions?
To try and get to know you.
Well, there's not much to know about.
Well, you've got a nice little flat. Good CD collection. Not a bad cook. And you are very pretty.
This is rubbish.
Gorgeous hair. Perfect skin.
Anna looks away.
Oh, lovely hands.
Richard takes another gulp of wine from his glass.
Shouldn't you be careful, aren't you driving?
Are you trying to tell me I should be leaving?
Do you miss your parrot? You said you have one.
Can we go to bed?
Anna looks into Richard's eyes. In his office, Langton takes a sip of whiskey as he looks at text and images of the original Black Dahlia case on his computer screen, a photo of the victim smiling beside a picture of her mutilated face. In her bed, Anna is lying on her stomach, asleep next to Richard, a blanket covering her body up to her naked back. He wakes up, glances at her, then gets out of bed gently. He walks through to the kitchen, wearing only boxer shorts. The candle in the living room is still lit. Richard pours himself a glass of water from the tap, takes a gulp, and puts the glass down. He walks over to the candle and blows out the flame. He walks over to a desk and is just about to turn off a lamp when he looks down and sees Anna's notepad. He opens it and flicks through the pages. Langton is still in his office. He smokes a cigarette, looking intently.
Sharon, this is DC Anna Travis. Can you call me, please?
Miss Bilkin, this is hair design. I'll need at least 4 hours for hair extensions, so make it 2 p.m.
Back in Anna's living room, Richard checks that he isn't being watched, then reaches into her briefcase. He takes out a file and opens it. He turns over a photo of Sharon Bilkin in Langton's office.
Sharon, about your leg and hip wax at 11, can you call me back to confirm, thanks?
Richard looks at photos of Sharon's dead body. Back in his office, Langton takes another swig of whiskey.
Sharon, this is DC Travis again. Will you please call me when you get this?
Richard flicks through the pages in Sharon Bilkin's file. There are photocopied cuttings from the Black Dahlia case, a picture of Louise, and drawings illustrating the injuries sustained to her mutilated body. Richard studies them intently, then looks over his shoulder to check Anna isn't watching. Langton emerges from his office looking dishevelled. He is shaving his face with a battery shaver. He wanders over to a desk and unties a bundle of newspapers. The Sunday Telegraph headline reads, "Police hunting Red Dahlia killer find second body." There is a photo of the Black Dahlia victim and one of Sharon Bilkin. Langton looks angry. Later, he pounds on Anna's front door. Anna opens the door in her dressing gown. She smiles, then her smile drops.
Why are you looking at me like that?
Talk to your bloody boyfriend. He's run it front page. It's all over the TV, now everyone else is picking it up.
Inside.
No detail left out, even down to the fact Louise Pennell was forced to eat her own shit. And if that wasn't enough, full details of Sharon Bilkin's murder.
But I didn't discuss it with him.
Talk about sleeping with the enemy. I bloody warned you. It's beyond belief. How could you be so stupid?
Anna frowns.
You're investigating a brutal murder. You're a detective, you know the rules, and you've broken them. You've passed highly confidential information to a journalist. What happened? You have a few too many drinks?
Do you want me off the case?
Too bloody right I do, but I don't know if I can spare the manpower. Every paper will be onto this in the morning.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, well, this is going to be a nightmare for us. The phones are going to be hopping with nutters. It's going to be pink and blue and yellow dahlias.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, let this be a lesson to you to keep your mouth shut and your legs crossed.
I don't like the way you're talking to me.
What?
I said I don't like the tone you're using.
It's the same tone I use with everybody else. Oh, what? You think I should treat you differently?
No, but I think you should treat me with respect and not jump to the conclusion automatically
that
I would have given him. I did not discuss the case file with Richard Reynolds.
Even his name sounds like some cartoon character. You stay away from the station until I decide what action I'm going to take.
Langton storms out. Later, at Richard's workplace.
Even the look in his face. He's Britain. I've got to go.
Dick.
Anna arrives.
Well, this is a surprise.
Not as surprised as I was when I read that. Waited till I was tipsy, did you?
I didn't have to wait. You were half cut by the time I arrived.
I've been kicked off the case. I probably don't have a career left, but that wouldn't interest you, would it? You got your story, and to hell with the consequences.
All I was doing was following what happened on the Black Dahlia murder.
Let's get you a coffee. Talking from private...
Here's your coffee!
She throws his coffee in his face. She knees him in the groin. Anna rests her chin on her hand as she watches the CCTV footage of Louise at the bar. Anna looks tired. On Anna's screen, Louise steps away from the bar and looks around. She turns her head to one side, and the image becomes that of her dead body, with her head in the same position, her face mutilated, with a slit mouth. Anna rubs her eyes wearily. Later, her head bowed, she stands outside the doors to the police station incident room. She looks up, braces herself, and walks in.
I've left about three messages. I can't call anyone.
Look who's here.
Surprised you've got the nerve.
You got a lot of bottle, Travis.
No, not really, but I need to say something to everyone.
Floor's yours.
Langton watches from his office sternly.
I really fouled up. And I'm here to say sorry to everyone. I have no excuse by the fact that I became very disturbed after the post-mortem, and I can only apologise. If my stupidity has made problems for this inquiry, then I am deeply ashamed and I am sorry.
Anna lowers her eyes. Her colleagues return to their work. Langton comes out of his office.
Travis.
Lewis and Anna look over at Langton, who stands in the doorway to his office. Lewis sits at his desk as Anna straightens her suit jacket and walks over to Langton. He steps aside and she enters.
I meant what I said.
Yeah, I'm sure you did, but it doesn't alter the facts. What do you think your father would have said?
He would have been ashamed, but I want you to know that I didn't discuss this case file with Richard Reynolds. He must have read my notebook whilst I was sleeping.
Well, and that makes it all right.
No.
Yes.
Third time this woman's called in. She keeps hanging up. Sam's scared, but she says she knows who the killer is.
It's all right. No, it's all right. I just...
Can you please stop crying and then I'll be able to hear you? I just can't hear you.
She's crying. I'm not sure how to handle this.
What line, Joe?
2.
Hello, this is DC Travis. Look, we really appreciate anyone calling with any information.
Is it being traced?
Would you like to give me your name, please? If you tell me what it is, you will feel calmer once it's over with, I promise. Right, I can't hear what you're saying.
Langton listens intently.
Who are you talking about, please?
Anna closes her eyes.
Okay, listen, if you are afraid of this person, I promise we can protect you.
She's called in 3 times. She sounds absolutely...
If you don't want me to know who you are, that is absolutely fine. But if you do have any information that can help us... Shit, I can't tell if she is drunk or stoned. Hello? Hello, are you there? Hello?
Anna strokes her face, looking stressed. Langton bows his head and rubs his forehead. She looks up at him.
Charles Henry Wickenham.
Barbara writes the name down.
Colonel Charles Henry Wickenham.
Lewis is still on the other phone.
Hello?
We've got a name.
Anna hangs up.
All right, let's not get our hopes up just yet. It could be a wife or a mistress with a grievance.
And don't make a move until we've got them checked out. Travis, stay put.
Barbara frowns and eyes Anna with suspicion. Anna averts her gaze and sits down. Lewis walks through the office with Langton.
The phone call came from a phone box in Guildford, but this Wickenham guy is listed as living in a small village 10 miles from Petworth. Huge pile, Mailing Hall, grade 2 listed, quite history actually. Apparently Henry VIII used to stay there, used as a hunting lodge.
Wickenham has no police records, but guess what? He's a retired army surgeon, well-respected member of the community.
You got any details, Barbara?
Yes, sir. Wickenham, he's been married twice, he's been widowed, he's paid a vast settlement in his divorce, he's got children from both his wives, 2 daughters and a son and heir, 30-year-old Edward Wickenham.
OK, good. Good work, everybody. Take a few hours' rest. We'll go over there in the morning. Travis.
Anna stands up from her desk nervously.
We're going to start with the daughters. You spoke to the caller, you might recognise the voice.
He walks off. Anna smiles to herself. A young girl answers an entry phone.
Hello?
DS Paul Baroli, here to see Miss Emily Wickenham.
Oh, all right, top floor.
She buzzes Baroli and Anna into her building.
Daddy's not shedding out much here.
The stairwell is shabby, in Emily's flat.
Is this about the break-in? It's the second time in 6 months, this time they took all my CDs. It's a real pain.
No, this is Detective Travis. Have you ever seen this girl, Louise Pennell?
No.
What about this girl? Her name's Sharon Bilkin.
No.
Where were you on the 15th of June?
Gosh, here probably. What's this about?
Both these girls were murdered.
Miss Wickenham, will you have a look at these photographs, please?
Lewis and Langton are at a stables. She looks at the photos.
Don't know them. Look the type. Daddy likes them young and tarty.
Okay, well, this girl's body was found near here.
Sharon Bilkin.
God, I heard about that. It was in the papers. I ride past it almost every morning. Almost had heart failure. Well, I wasn't here at the time. I was in Milan with my mother.
Lewis glances at Langton.
Do you live close by?
Just there. Rent a flat.
Who owns it? Your father?
He pays for it. Never been inside. I don't see him.
She strides off. Lewis and Langton follow her, at a distance, across a courtyard and up a step into a room with saddles and bridles.
What about your brother?
Half-brother. Not seen him for months.
Did you get on?
Not into all that stuff.
What stuff?
She glances up, then looks away.
Edward got kicked out of school for smoking dope. He gets a lot of stick from my father because he's not very bright.
His late wife committed suicide, did you know?
Why do you want to know about Edward? Asking all these questions about my father. Oh, God. It's Emily, isn't it? She's been saying things. Look, you can't take seriously anything she says. She's got a lot of problems. She's bulimic. Nearly died a few years ago.
I haven't talked to your sister.
Well, I don't think I'm going to talk to you anymore.
She walks off. Back in Emily's bedroom.
Do you have a good relationship with your father? Why do you want to know about my father? What about your brother? You have a good relationship with him? Edward? Not especially. He's my half-brother.
Do you know if your father has girls up at the house? Maybe like the ones we've shown you.
I wouldn't know. Daddy is always having weekend parties, but I don't go. We don't particularly like each other. I hardly lived at home when I was at boarding school, and when they divorced, I lived with my mother.
Look at these girls again, Emily. Both of them were brutally murdered, and this girl... You read the papers, she's been dubbed the Red Dahlia.
Did your father ever entertain young girls like these, Emily? Perhaps with your brother? I don't know, you're frightening me. I think you should go. I'm not going to talk to you anymore. This is very upsetting, and I'm not going to talk to you because this is my house, and you can't be in my house. I don't know who you are, and I'm not going to answer any of your questions.
At the police station.
Ah, Commander. Right. Pay attention, everyone.
Commander Lee addresses the team. Anna and Langton exchange looks.
Charles Wickenham is now your prime suspect. I think it's important to know what he was like as a husband, so you'll need to interview his ex-wife as soon as possible. I believe your killer has a hatred of women. Very likely he has sociopathic tendencies with a compulsion to create terrible pain. I would also think he's addicted to drugs.
I've got it.
Amphetamines to get high, even out his hyperactive side. He might even use morphine. His ego is such that he will believe he is above suspicion. His tools of torture will, I think, be close to him. He'll enjoy cleaning and inspecting them. Just as he'll enjoy the fact that he's under suspicion, because he is absolutely certain that he can outwit the police.
Gough Parade's already over at the car park.
Very informative, Commander, thank you.
I haven't finished.
Oh, sorry, go on.
The more rope you give this man, the more he will move to putting the noose around his neck. It is imperative that you have enough evidence to arrest him. He has some very influential friends.
In Lewis's car.
We know how much it's worth.
Millions. He's also got a villa in France, and he was left his estate by his old man.
Three generations live there, apparently, sir. His father bought up the land just after the war for peanuts.
Make millions from it.
It's all right for some. My old man left me a load of unpaid bills in a council house. Got sent the eviction order 2 weeks after we buried him.
They drive through a gateway down a long driveway, past a parked Range Rover. They pull up at the entrance of a grand house. Two statues stand on a manicured lawn.
So this is where Daddy lives.
They get out of the car. A housekeeper opens the large, nail-studded wooden door.
Yes?
She has her hair pulled back in a tight bun and is wearing a pinafore over her dress. She leads Langton, Lewis, Anna and Baroli past a staircase.
This way. Would you just wait a minute, please?
Thank you.
The housekeeper stands aside as the team walk into a wood-panelled study.
Love, the housekeeper wasn't the woman that phoned in. Her voice was lighter, softer, more well-spoken.
A man in his 30s comes in.
I'm Edward Wickenham. I believe you wanted to see me.
Actually, it was your father we wanted to see. Is he home?
Yeah, somewhere. It's not about these bloody congestion charges, is it? I can't believe you've actually had to come here. I've told you I'll pay them. Every week I get another letter saying it's double. You know, living in the country, it's very difficult to know where the congestion charge actually starts. I mean, the King's Road, for God's sake.
It's not about the congestion charges, Mr. Wickenham. I'm Detective Chief Inspector James Langdon. These are Detectives Travis, Lewis and Baroli.
Why do you want to see my father?
Personal matter, sir. If you could just get him to come and see us, please.
Well, to be honest, I'm not actually sure where he is. He might be over at the stables. Anybody might be out on one of the horses.
Well, maybe you could walk us over to the stables.
I'm not even sure he's over there.
Why don't we go and see? Paul, you stay here.
Anna passes her bag to Baroli and leaves with the others. Edward Wickenham leads them through the house in single file.
It's a bit of a maze, I'm afraid, but this is the quickest route. We'll go through the kitchen out to the back door.
In the kitchen, Edward puts Wellington boots on. The housekeeper sits at the table.
Are there any other female staff in the house?
No, but Mr. Wickenham's girlfriend is staying here.
Which Mr. Wickenham?
She's referring to my fiancée.
What's her name?
Gail. Gail Harrington. But she's away at a health spa at the moment. Look, we could have gone round the house, but this way's quicker. It's a bit muddy, though, mind you. We've had some bad weather lately.
Thank you.
I'll just check if he's in here first.
Edward Wickenham leads Langton, Lewis and Anna down a stone path to a small church. They go inside, but it's empty.
We can try the stables.
He goes back outside and they follow him as he walks briskly across a garden fenced by small trees past a pond. A gardener is digging in a flower bed.
Morning, Frankie.
To a stable boy.
My father about?
No, sir.
Is he out in Belmarsh?
Could be over at the paddock, sir.
I have to go out, actually, and I'm afraid I'm going to be late, so I suggest we return to the house.
Let's just try the paddock, shall we?
Edward walks off and the team follow him down a long path with dense woodland on either side.
Wait here a moment, will you?
Langton, Lewis and Anna hang back, watching Edward as he walks up to a man who is approaching on horseback. They each stand, staring intently.
My son says you want to speak to me. Get Walter to check him out. He's a bit short in front. Might be just a shoe.
He approaches.
He's a bit flat this morning. So, what's all this about?
Can we speak back at the house?
Of course. I'll just take a shower first, if you don't mind. Get this over with.
He rides past.
Only take a moment.
The team wait for Charles Wickenham in a grand wood-panelled room, adorned with portrait paintings and a piano.
Well, I don't know about anyone else, but I could do with a drink. Can I get you all something?
No, thank you.
So, what's all this about? Do sit down.
He eyes Anna.
I'm conducting an inquiry into the murder of a young woman, Louise Pennell. The newspapers have given her the nickname the Red Dahlia. I were also investigating the murder of another girl, Sharon Bilken. Possibly killed by the same person.
One more.
Holding the whiskey he has poured himself, Charles walks over to the arched doorway.
Hilda! A light lunch for me. I'm sorry, but if I don't warn her, it'll be a meat and potatoes.
He's wearing the ring described by the landlady.
You were saying?
Langton produces a photo of Louise.
Do you know this girl?
No.
A photo of Sharon Bilken.
You know this girl?
Sorry, no, don't.
Charles's grin breaks into an insincere smile.
A witness, in fact, two witnesses, without conferring, produced this profile.
Would you say this is a good likeness?
For me?
Yes.
Why are you showing me these photographs and this drawing, is it?
We made many requests via the press for this man to come forward. Tall, dark, grey-haired. Now, I think this is an exceptional likeness. So perhaps the best solution would be if you agreed to come to an identity parade.
Me?
Yes, you, Dr. Wickenham.
It's Colonel Wickenham.
Colonel!
Colonel.
That will either eliminate you or conversely prove that you did, on several occasions, visit the victim, Louise Pennell.
When am I supposed to have visited this woman?
Firstly, on April the 19th.
This year?
Yes.
One moment. I'll get my diary. It's in the study.
He leaves the room.
Well, cool customer.
Charles comes back in.
Here we are, April the 19th. Yes, I had lunch at my club, the St. James's, followed by a lengthy meeting with my ex-wife squabbling over money. And my solicitor.
Can these meetings be verified?
Of course. If you wish, I can contact them and they'll get in touch with you.
Thank you. You're a surgeon in the army, is that correct?
Yes, I was. Almost in a past life. I retired 10 years ago. Obviously, I didn't need the money, and I wanted to spend more time with my children.
Anna struck a note on the piano.
Do you play the piano?
Yes, I do.
He turns to a portrait of a woman.
My mother had high hopes of her becoming a concert pianist, hopes as high as she, unfortunately, usually was. So I opted for surgery.
Thank you. You've been most helpful. Sorry for taking up your time. We'll arrange an identity parade for tomorrow. We'll send a car for you.
I don't think it'll be necessary once you've verified my diary.
Charles leads them out as they walk away from the house.
He's a piece of work.
He's a killer, I smell it.
Charles closes the front door. ITFC audio description. Next time...
This is a bit unethical.
Yeah, well, we can work around it.
I meant giving you this.
A crime file.
If she sees me give you anything, she will kill me.
Jesus Christ.
Edward in bed with a woman.
Did Charles hire you? I know he has a predilection for prostitutes, and I also suspect he couldn't keep his hands off his own daughter.
Edward, tell Emily I love her.
Justine.
You're not allowed into my flat.
I'm afraid you have no option, Miss Whitney.
Now get out of my way!
She slaps Baroli. Edward.
I can't take any more of this.
Then stop it. Don't protect him.
Charles outside a building. Inside, his daughters look frightened. Anna, Langton and Baroli in a dark room. Baroli shines a torch on a tray of surgical instruments.